Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's a beautiful Sabbath day. I guess it just started to rain outside a little bit, and down here in Florida, they need all the rain they can get. Last I heard on the news a while back was that most of Florida was going through a drought time, and they were 5 feet below their regular usual level of rainfall for the last number of years. 5 feet, that's a lot of rain. Hopefully it doesn't come down today all at once, or we'll know what Noah felt like. You know, we'll start calling the animals, come, you know. So we're down here today in Tallahassee, Florida. A number of churches have gathered together where we can get together and have get some spiritual food and a little bit later some physical food and some fellowship. Looking forward to that. I want to say greetings to all the churches around the country and all the people who are scattered and at home either listening or watching this. I hope that you have a fine and good Sabbath. We are trying to have that here. Everyone's in good spirits. And maybe I shouldn't say good spirits. We're all in good spirit. By God's Holy Spirit. We've been down here in Florida this week, finalizing all the feast presentations or preparations for the 2001 feast in St. Petersburg in Clearwater area. And that went very, very well. And you'll all be receiving a letter on that in the next few weeks. And we'll be able to go ahead and start getting our accommodations and things. You know, things change so fast. I was talking with someone just before services, and again, we were both saying how life is very short. Even if we live to be 90 or 100 years old, that's pretty short. It goes by too quick. And we never know from day to day whether we're going to wake up. You don't know. You have no guarantee. I mean, God didn't come down and, you know, take his blood, if whatever he has in his veins, and write it and give it to you and say, you're going to have X number of years. I think that's pretty well set for most of us, but we don't know. We have no idea. And so we must learn to live as Christ taught us, not yesterday and not a minute ago. That's already past history. Can't change that. But today, we live today. Enjoy it today. See what's around you today. Enjoy that. You know, take time, as the song goes, to smell the roses a little bit. Because tomorrow you may not be able to smell them. And that would be a real nice thing to have, one of the last thoughts on your mind. You're going to wake up and, boy, those roses were good. There seems to be a passage of time here, you know. And, oh, yes, there's Jesus Christ. So we never know. We ask God to give us good health and to direct us, inspire us, direct our lives, and then have the faith and the strength that he's going to do that. And don't be too concerned about tomorrow. Try to plan for tomorrow if you can, but God willing. And those words, more and more, are meaning a lot more to me. When I say, well, we'll be there tomorrow, God willing, because you really don't know. And God willing, we'll be there. If not, then God will something else. So the feast this year, I'll just give you a quick preview here what we're going to do. And the letters all should be out in the field before anyone hears us out in the field. So you'll get the first shot at this. The feast this year goes from Tuesday to Tuesday. So we haven't had a Sabbath in between here for a couple of years, the way the calendar came out. The first day we're going to be back at the Harborview Center in Clearwater. Well, services in the afternoon, and then we'll have a nice dinner that evening. Prime ribs, chicken, whatever you want, it'll be coming out on the in the letter. And it's a time for all of us to get together, see one another again. We've been corresponding through letters and telephones and emails and what have you, and so we get together then. And then on Sabbath, we have a real treat. We're going to go down. We just don't have the time this year to really work in a boat trip. And we've done that for a number of years. So I thought we would pass on that. And Sabbath was going to be there. And down here in Florida, everybody gets married on a Saturday in October. That's just what happens. They get married all year long, but they really fill up all the available halls at that time. So what we're going to do is we're going to meet at Don Zazar's down in St. Pete Beach. And that's one of the old classic, it's probably the classic hotel on the west coast there of Florida. And it's all been redone, and the man was just telling me they put $20 million just in the rooms in the old hotel. They took them right down to the studs and put new drywall, everything, new plumbing, electricity. And it's an elegant, very elegant old hotel. I was going to say, this, it's the type of a hotel where all of our old ministers, they'd make you stay in all the little cheap joints, and they'd all go there. This is the kind of place they'd have their ministerial meetings and dinners and everything else paid for by the church. Well, we've changed that around, and the church pays for all of these meals. And it's a time for all of us to get together. It's a time for the church to say thank you to God's people for the loyalty and the honor that they bring to God's church. So we're going to have to be there a little earlier, so we're going to have a great big breakfast buffet. So it'll start a little bit earlier, and then we'll break and then go to service probably starting around noon. And then we're out by around 3 o'clock, and you have time to get together with people, invite them over to the condos, have an evening meal together with people. And that's going to work out very nicely. We're in two of their biggest ballrooms, which is just gorgeous. Going to set a very, very nice time for the Sabbath. The last great day, we're going to be back at Harborview Center. And a lot of people will be checking out that morning. So we're going to have a nice deli lunch. And then we're going to have services in the afternoon. And so that'll work out real fine. So, yeah, I already said that we're not going to have that boat trip. We only have about 3 full days there. You only have Wednesday and Thursday full days. And that Sunday, full day, to do things with your families, get together, because Friday you're coming into the holy day, and Monday you're coming into a holy day. So everyone seems to enjoy getting together, which is the way it should be. And we have just a wonderful time. It really is the time of the year that we can all show that really that true love that God is putting within all of us, to love one another and not judge. I might say if it gets too loud out in that hall, we'll have to close that door. But it seems like this particular room, the air conditioning is not working too well in. So we're leaving the door open, and maybe we'll get some requests out there. No, we don't do that. You know, we really can show a lot of love at the feast. You know, before, in old worldwide and the old associations we came from, God wasn't giving us what he's giving us now. And we, every one of us, judged. Don't think you didn't judge one another. Everyone judged. You couldn't help but to judge. You may not have taken out a list and written down, well, that guy has this problem, but you thought it, and you judge, and you're always comparing yourselves. And we all did it. And we didn't know we were doing it, but we were doing it. And now we have an opportunity to be together, and we'll still probably always judge till the day we die. But I see it throughout the whole church, that judging is coming down and coming down. We start looking at our brethren as our brothers and our sisters. Oh, they may have a problem, but so do you. And we all know we have problems, but God is the one that's overcoming that. And so we know the reason we have the problems is because of Satan the devil. And he's the one doing it. And so now we look at someone and we may see a problem. We go, look what Satan is doing to my brother or sister there. And now you get angry at Satan. You get angry at that evil. And that's the whole point. That's the whole point. God has done something very, very special with all of us. But I'm just seeing it more and more. We're kind of representing more of the brain. Not that we're intelligent, because we're all abased. We're all from the low. He is choosing from the old church the weak of the weak. But he is going to do something within us that glorifies him. And everyone's going to see us and go, he did in them, he's going to do it in us, you know, very quickly. And he always has his power and his glory come through, and it's a free gift, and we've done nothing, or we don't do anything to keep it. It's just a free gift, and so we're very happy about that. So, I didn't bring any jokes with me, but I did remember a couple. I'll tell you real quick, just so we don't break the train on that. My brother and I were, I was about 7 or 8 years old. I was about a year and a half younger than him. And we're at my grandmother's house. And my grandmother, she just didn't pay attention to much. I mean, she paid attention to what she was doing. And she, oh, yeah, you know. And real sweet, nice lady, but didn't listen to you all that often. So we're going to tell you. I said, Grandma, we got two jokes to tell you. Oh, yeah, you tell. I said, now listen to these. These are, you got to think this out, you know. And I'm 7 or 8 years old. So I said, Grandma, I says, there will, and all the children should enjoy these, and all of us as big children should. I says, Grandma, there was a nickel and a dime on the table. The nickel rolled off. How come the dime didn't? Well, she didn't know. So I says, well, because the dime had more sense. See, even though we're old, it's just a cute little joke. Now, please don't let anyone leave the church over this. If you get offended at this, then you're probably not with us anyway, okay? All right. Come on, I was 7, 8 years old. I told Grandma this. I said, now, Grandma, really listen to this. Now, there was two morons, and they were on top of the Empire State Building. And one was smoking a cigar, and he threw away the wrong butt. See? All right, it's taking time, but everyone's getting this. I'm 7, 8 years old, Tom. This is really funny. Boy, my brother and I laughing. Finally, he said, Grandmother, did you think, what did you think about that? Oh, she says, that could happen to anybody. So she wasn't even listening to the joke. But we thought, there's your couple quick jokes on that. All right, today I want to try to keep this as one sermon, which is, you know, when I get out in the field, everybody always laughs at me on that. So I'm still not done with the foundation one, and that, I guess, the last one will be 18 on that. Today's sermon is entitled, My Servant, Nebuchadnezzar. My Servant, Nebuchadnezzar. Oh, that's a quote from God there. God was saying that, not Satan. Now, he was the king of Babylon. He was the third head of the beast. And God says, that's my servant. At least when he used him, that was his servant. We have to remember, just like with King David. King David was a man after God's own heart. Let's see, was he a man after God's own heart when he was lusting, committing adultery, murdering, numbering the people? All those things that God says don't do, and yet he did. Was he a man after God's own heart then? Well, of course not. But when God's Spirit was working with him and doing it right, he did it right. He was taught. He was trained. He's going to be that prince forever in that New Jerusalem. So he knows. God did it with him. You know, how can this be that God would call Nebuchadnezzar his servant? What did God want to show? What did he want to show here? Why did he do this? I want to start by reading a small part from an article. And don't write in about it. When we publish it, you'll all get it. And I won't even tell you the title, so I will spare myself a lot of grief from people writing in on this. But this was just a small couple of little pages here from this that we did a long time ago. And it kind of tells a story. You don't have to take notes. You can take notes if you want, but you don't have to turn to these scriptures. I'll read the scriptures, but some of them we'll come back to. And hopefully my dyslexia isn't kicking up too bad today. It is strange how all these different diseases, these different things that we all have, you know, some weeks be able to read very easily. Some weeks I will not. Sometimes I really have to struggle with that. And like I said, God didn't call the strong. He didn't call the mighty. And he didn't do it with me either. You know, I'm just one of the brethren. He picked somebody right from the congregation, not somebody else. And it works better that way, because then we see God's power and his spirit and what he's doing. So I'm going to read this to you real quick. It gives the general story of this. And you keep this in your mind a little bit. It's an amazing thing. I can't get into all the history. I'm going to go into some of the history if I have the time. I'm just going to break into this, so this is a part of another paper. It says, let's look at the example of another who fell into the hands of the living God. You know, he's just walking along doing his own business, and God says, I'm going to do something with you. And how his thinking changed after God so dramatically interrupted his life. Now, he was not a righteous man as Job was. Job was righteous. He did the law of God. God allowed him to do that and helped him do that. But he was mightily used by God in carrying out what God had already said that he was going to do. God used him directly in the recording of what is even yet to come. He was even used to write a part of the Bible. That man is King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. And it's fascinating to see the precise thing that God always does. And he always lets people know before he does it. And then he does it. And then he always comes back and says, see, I told you that 300 years ago, and now it's happening. My servant told you then, and now it's happening. Or 50 years, or 1,000 years. And it always happens. That's how you know God is God. It's that proof of that. It says, once again, as in the case of Job, when you read what God says about him, you will see him in a different light. Remember, he is an instrument in God's hands. God used him to fulfill what he said he would do to Judah for disobeying and turning from him. And we know the 10 tribes of Israel, they just broke off. Judah was left there, and the others were went into captivity, all kinds of things. But this is what was happening to Judah. It says, notice Jeremiah 25:9. It says, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, says the Lord, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and will bring against this land, Judah, and against the inhabitants thereof, and against all these nations round about it, and will utterly destroy them. So he's saying he's going to do it. He's going to do this to Judah. God says in Jeremiah 27, verses 5, 6, and 8, I have made the earth, the man and the beast that are upon the ground, by my great power and my outstretched arm, and have given it unto whom it seemed meet unto me. I can do anything I want. I am, after all, the eternal God. And he can do anything. And now I have given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant. And the beasts of the field have I given him also to serve him. And it shall come to pass that the nation and kingdom which will not serve the same Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and that will not put their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon, that nation will I punish, says the Lord, with a sword and with famine and with pestilence, until I have consumed them by his hand. You know, this is really strange. This is the third head of the beast, of Satan. And yet God is coming right in and using that beast, controlled by Satan, doing anything he wants. Which, of course, shows you that Satan is very weak. Now, he's stronger than all of us, and he can come down here and squash us like a bug. But to God's power, and the power that God is going to be granting and giving us someday, Satan is a nothing. He is a nobody. And when God protects you, Satan can't get in. He can't do it. He really can't. And if you go through trials and tribulations like we all do, we all learn from it too. And I think that's been amazing over the last number of years. I've seen church members go through like I had to go through before them so I would understand. And they're going through a horrendous thing sometimes. And yet I talk with them, or they write me a letter, call me, whatever, and say, that it doesn't matter. And life itself doesn't matter anymore. If I'm supposed to be here, I'll be here. If I'm not, then I won't. But I know who's doing this. Satan is doing this. I didn't bring this upon myself. Satan is doing it because who we are, and God's allowing it. And that's okay, because I have peace and I have joy. And Satan will never take that away from me. That's going to be there forever. And, you know, you cringe because you want to go and help. But there's really nothing you can do. And God puts people in a situation where you can't help. And then His will is just done. And everyone comes out of it generally better. Generally better. In fact, every time so far. So going on here, if I keep blabbing, I won't even get through this paper. And it'll have to be part 18 again. So I'll try to continue. It says, Ezekiel, who was taken captive by Babylon, by King Nebuchadnezzar, during one of his campaigns against Judah, was later inspired to write, and there was about five campaigns or so, don't quote me, but I believe there was about five campaigns, where they came down and they took everyone out of Judah, then they'd leave some people, and they said, well, submit to my brother, the king here, and they give him tribute, and then they finally said, no, we're not going to, and it just went back and forth, back and forth. To finally, at the end, when Jeremiah told the remnant that was still there in Judah, just stay here, it'll be peaceful. No, no, we're leaving. So they got up and they went down to Egypt. Well, Egypt ticked off Nebuchadnezzar. He went down there and tore them apart down there. And God saved a little remnant so things could keep on going. The history of all of these nations are just fascinating. And it always was done by words that he said was going to happen. And it always happened. So he was inspired to write, Son of man, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, caused his army to serve a great service against Tyrus. Every head was made bald, every shoulder was peeled, yet had he no wages, nor his army for Tyrus, for the service that he had served against it. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will give the land of Egypt unto Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and he shall take her multitude, and take her spoil, and take her prey, and it shall be the wages for his army. I have given him the land of Egypt for his labor, wherewith he served against it, because they wrought for me, says the Lord. And of course, God had a specific purpose in turning Egypt over to this fierce conqueror. After the last campaign against Judah, only a few small remnants was allowed to be left behind back there in Judah. Well, they decided to flee, which I already told you. I should keep my mouth shut and just read this. I always want to put in the things. They decided to flee Egypt against Jeremiah's warning not to. King Nebuchadnezzar and his army fulfilled what God said would happen to these people if they should go to Egypt. And, of course, that all happened. It was in 2 Kings 25 and Jeremiah chapters 40 to 46. Very interesting reading. It says, God had his hand on King Nebuchadnezzar. He was going to reveal himself to him and show his power. He placed the prophet Daniel, and he came up in one of these campaigns, in a position to have direct access to the king. He began by sending a dream to him that he wanted interpreted. Of course, none of the wise men were able to accept Daniel, who began by saying, very important when you represent God, But there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and makes known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. In other words, what's coming for you, Nebuchadnezzar? The God in heaven over all of these gods you may have, this is the supreme God, and he makes these things known. This was the first time he ever heard of this God in heaven. After Daniel interpreted this dream, and none of the others could, King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel. He didn't understand about God. He just fell down and worshipped Daniel and commanded that they should all give him different things and sweet odors unto him. In other words, worship him, you know, honor him. Comment that we put in here, it says, was it a good thing for him that God winks at the time of ignorance? Otherwise, he would have struck him down dead. You don't worship anyone, and only God. But in ignorance, we've all gone down that route. Ignorance is unawareness. That's all it means. You're unaware. So if somebody says to you, you're ignorant, don't hit them. Let's discuss it first. Then you may... No, you don't want to ever hit somebody. That's what we came out of. We just walk away. However, he did say to Daniel, of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing you could reveal the secret, because none of his seers, none of them could do it. And here Daniel comes and just tells them what it is. Of course, we all know King Nebuchadnezzar did not really understand what it was he was saying, because after that, he had a great image made and commanded everyone to bow down and worship it unless they wanted to be burned alive. So that was a cute thing that happened there with Daniel, but he still believed in his gods. So he made this big god of gold, which he really pictured in that one vision of the heads of the beast. He was enraged by a report of three Jews refusing to comply and commanded that they were brought before him. He asked them, "Is it true that you do not serve my gods nor worship the golden image which I have set up? And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" That was cute for Revelation over there, but I'm the king. And you have to understand, this isn't like the king or queen of England or something, which has no power whatsoever. In times past, the king of England had it. And in times past, all these kings, they were like a god to their people. And they said, "Hey, I don't like what that man said. You guys with a sword, run over there right now and kill him." No one says, "Well, do you think we ought to take him outside?" No. They would run over and leap on the guy and kill him. Because if they didn't, the king would say, "Now you group, go and kill that group that didn't obey me, and then go kill him also." And it would be done. He had the power of life and death physically in his hands. So always put yourself back in the position. Put yourself back there seeing this. You know, you're really a slave in this country. And here this man, this king, is saying, "What are you talking about? Who is going to save you and deliver you from me?" Because nothing like that ever happened before. He says, well, let me make sure that I see what... Okay, almost skipped a paragraph here. Well, God did deliver these men out of his hands through a mighty miracle, and absolutely astounded the king and all of those in his kingdom. Then Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and changed the king's word and yielded their bodies, and they that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own god. Therefore, I make a decree. Now he saw something really physical right in front of him. He says that every people, nation, language, which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, shall be cut in pieces. Now, if you were there and you heard this, I don't think you'd say anything against their God, because somebody would come and hack you in pieces. And their houses shall be made dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Oh yeah, all the Egyptians and all these people prayed to their little stone gods, and nothing would ever happen. They'd have some little magic tricks done, that's about all. Since these two encounters with this God in heaven was only a formal introduction, God was simply getting his attention. And this is what he's done to all, each one of us as well. Same process. Now God was going to deal directly with King Nebuchadnezzar on a personal level, just as he did with Job. And we all know, remember that story, and we have a sermon on that. Now he was going to really come to know God in his heart. He was starting to see a little bit. And on a physical plane, okay. And that's what we all do when we come into this first, and our mind starts to get open. We get it in our heads. I don't know how else to explain. We get it in our heads, and we get it scholastically, but we don't right away get it in the heart. And with that emotion and that feeling. And it takes a little bit of time. And the judging is still there. And you all go, well, I try not to judge there too, and blah, blah. But after it's there for a while, you get it here, and the judging goes down, and you start to look to God as the true God in heaven, and we take ourselves out of that, and all of our little self-righteousness out of it. Since the whole chapter of the book of Daniel, the fourth book of Daniel, is written by none other than King Nebuchadnezzar himself, about what God did with him, and we'll be reading that. His personal account is part of God's inspired word that will stand as a witness for all eternity. It says, I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God has wrought toward me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is everlasting. It's an everlasting kingdom. And his dominion is from generation to generation. You know what's in those words? Those aren't just words. Those are inspired words of God. And they're in your book. This is forever. King Nebuchadnezzar goes on to explain that he had another dream, and once again Daniel was the only one who could tell him the meaning. This time, however, it directly involved him. He was going to be stripped of his power, given a beast's heart, and made to live with the beasts of the field and eat grass as oxen for 7 long years. This is the king of Babylon. He had that wall around the whole city, which I believe it was either 5 or 4, 5, 7 chariots could ride abreast, right across all the way along on this wall. Huge. No one could get in there. Someone finally did. But it was, you hear about the Hanging Gardens of Babylon and all of that. And it was magnificent. It was magnificent. And he's the king, and he's in good health, and no one can come against him. What? I'm going to live like an animal for 7 years? Yeah, well, I'll think about that one. You know, that didn't come through too clear. He hadn't seen God. He saw it a little bit in his head, but he didn't know him in the heart, just like all of us. We've all been put through these different things. So once again, this judgment of God was all for a purpose, to show God's power. He showed something with this. He was going to be used by God as an example, as was Job and Pharaoh and ancient Israel, the inhabitants of Sodom and Gomorrah, the prophets, etc. all done for examples to stand forever, generation after generation, of how and what God does. God was not punishing him because he slipped up and he had it coming, which we all thought in the past. We'd see somebody go through a trial and go, if they were as close to God as I was, they wouldn't be going through that. Oh, no. No. Now God does it. And he allows it. He was merely an instrument in God's hands that was used to demonstrate a very important lesson. And I'll just keep reading this. It says, notice in verse 17, and we'll be going through this, this matter is by decree of the watchers. Those are the guardian angels. Those are Gabriel and all of that. And the demand by the word of the holy ones. That, of course, is the Father in heaven, the Word that was with him, that was going to become his Son. To the intent that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of man and gives it to whosoever he will and sets up over it the basest of men. And we may even say they're the basest of angels. So men can be interpreted, men like man or angel. And he certainly put Satan over as God of this earth. And boy, that's about as base as you can get. It's base. Satan is the base. This was a very important and significant event that God decreed must take place. King Nebuchadnezzar was the most powerful man on earth, the ruler over the most powerful kingdom that was there. This human king of Babylon was used to portray the power, glory, and attitude of that spirit king of Babylon, Satan himself, and to demonstrate what God was going to do to him. Because all these men represented Satan in these heads. And God just showed real quick, hey, look what I can do. Kaboom. Right as you have one of the heads of your beast, bang, I can do this. My power is over everything. Nothing can withstand it. He cannot lie. And when he says everyone's going to be there, everyone is going to be there in their own order, in the way he has it set up. Even though Satan is an extremely powerful god of this world and totally controls it, there is one greater and even more powerful and who will abase him. Don't ever forget that. No matter what Satan is allowed to do to you, just remember, yeah, well, you're going to be catching yours pretty soon. You may be allowed to do this to me, but that victory of death will not stay over me. It will not stay over all of my brothers and sisters. And you will regret the day that you do this to us. Nebuchadnezzar had no say whatsoever in this. He didn't have a choice. He didn't choose to do this or not. It just was going to happen. He had no control over his heart, his tongue, when he spoke, is not this great Babylon? As he walked, and we'll be reading this, that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for my honor and my majesty. You know, after he's already been told he's going to be living like an animal, he goes out there a while later and says all of this. This was and is Satan's attitude. This is in Isaiah, by my strength, by my hand I have done it, and by my wisdom, for I am prudent, and I have removed the bonds of the people and have robbed their treasures. Think of yourself and your life. This is what Satan's been doing to everyone. And I have put down inhabitants. He's just put down everybody. And my hand hath found as a nest of riches of the people. And as one gathers eggs that are left, I have gathered all the earth. And there was none that moved the wing or opened the mouth or peeped. Nothing. I controlled it all. And he did. So the fearful thing began 12 months later and lasted for 7 years, just as God said. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to cut this a little short because we're going to reread this anyway. But he goes through here, and we'll read about this. And it shows how God takes this man, puts him out as a wild beast for 7 years, and then turns his heart, turns this man's heart to do it the right and proper way. It says, this Gentile king truly glorified and feared God the rest of his days because he knew in his heart, as Job finally did, just who and what the Most High God is. When God does lay his hand on someone, for whatever purpose, there is no alternative. When he executes his judgment and commands his will to be carried out, there is no turning back. There is no discussion. Well, let me talk to you about this, God. I got this other option A, you know, that's not going to be quite as bad on me. There is no discussion in the matter. There is no place to run or hide, as the prophet Jonah tried to do. God does not compromise with anyone or anything. God is very merciful to both these men who were called upon to sacrifice all but their lives for a period of time. He restored both men, both of them, to their prosperity and allowed them to live out the rest of their days in peace. Needless to say, they both walked very humbly before their God. And that, of course, is what he is, you know, doing to us. It's none of our self-dignity. It's none anything that we can offer God why we're here today. We didn't know anything more than anyone else, but our names are written in that book, and our time to know it was now. And he drug us back from all kinds of things. Some of us were completely out of the church. Others of us were in the church, and we're still out of the church. And we just didn't know what we were doing. We're all confused. We're all lost sheep. We're all out of the pasture. We're all up in the mountains and ravines. And your loving brother and your loving father grabbed you and pulled you back and drug you back and opened up our minds to amazing mysteries, amazing things that we never knew before and that most have never understood. It is a tremendous and a wonderful thing what God has done with all of us. And in a moment here, we'll go in and read some of the scriptures that go along with this. Some of his things that he said and how he worked it out. His word is always sure, always, every time, he never slips up. So in a moment then, we'll continue on with this.